From our studio in Houston, Texas,
it's time for the Angry Admins Podcast. Welcome back. This is the Angry Admins Podcast for April 1st, 2008. I am Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
And this is episode 65. We are back again after a short break. Just in time for April Fool's Day.
Yes.
So we will neglect from making the statement about how we are no longer doing this show because it may end up being true.
Right. Never assume that we're just going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Every week that you see a new download, just consider it like a little gift.
That's right. It's our gift to you.
Right.
Because it's so great.
Our generosity continues.
Yeah. So, but it is April Fool's Day. We are recording this on April 1st. There's some pretty good April Fool's stuff. You know, it's been the last couple of years, it's kind of become the thing to, you know, release a new announcement that's fake. And there's a couple of good ones today. Was there any of them that caught your eye?
So, yeah, there's a few. There was, so the Google had the thing where you could send emails that were backdated.
That one was pretty good.
There was that. Let's see what else. Some of the game sites had one, had some stuff. World of Warcraft had like one of the new classes that was a fake thing. Okay. Blizzard usually does pretty good little spoofs on their websites that gets everyone all riled up. I'm trying to think of any other major ones that were out there.
Did you see the YouTube one where all the featured videos on the YouTube page were Mr. Rick Astley.
Rick Astley.
Right. Everyone got Rickrolled.
Yeah. How about the Virgil? Did you see Virgil?
I did not see Virgil.
So this was a thing on the Google homepage.
Okay.
That Google was going to team up with Virgin Mobile. And basically that the Branson guy that heads up Virgin was going to start a Mars colony. And that you could apply to be a potential Mars colonist. Google had their whole little, you know how they do their little... If you read like the FAQs on Google Docs or something, they have like their nice little page with the little graphics, and they had done like a whole little thing.
Nice. So.
But yeah, there was, if you look out there, there was all kinds of stuff. So
Nice.
So it was probably 2 a.m. when I went to bed, and these things were starting to filter in around midnight.
Yeah.
And I was like really exhausted because I was up late two nights in a row, and I was like, really?
And then it just falling like, for it all.
Oh, wait a minute. It's April 1st.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of prepped myself this year because last year I got suckered into a couple of them. Like, I believed it for a good solid 10 minutes, and I felt ashamed and not a proper...
Oh, when I saw the Google thing about the backdated Gmail, I was like, that's actually kind of nice.
Well, it would be, wouldn't it? I mean, you know, you could send it... Well, and the cool part was not only the backdated, but you could mark it as read. So you could send an email.
No, I sent it, man.
You even saw it already. Just check.
Right. Yeah, there were some good ones.
Yeah, well, so anyway. But there were some actual announcements in the past 2 weeks that we thought we should cover. First one I really am kind of, I wouldn't say excited about because I don't use Google Docs that often, but I'm pleased to see that things are continuing in the direction I'm hoping they will continue in, and that's that Google finally is allowing offline access to the Google Docs set up with Google Gears. So Google Gears is the plugin for Firefox that lets you basically, all it did before was let you take Google Reader offline, sort of creates a database locally on your machine that then Firefox will access and display those pages as if you were online. They've expanded this to Google Docs. And it actually, from the video they released, I haven't actually tried it out myself, but from the video they released, they show it actually just kind of auto-syncing, so you don't have to hit the button to go offline like you did with Google Reader, and which makes sense because you'll have a lot less documents than you would Google Reader stories. So pretty cool. They showed a quick video. We'll have a link in the show notes, but... if you are a big Google Docs user, I would check this out and start using it because that means you can now edit your documents offline.
That's kind of nice. I think the whole Google Docs thing is, it's not improving at an like a tremendous rate.
Right.
But when they do add little things, they're always significant and worthwhile. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't just feel like feature bloat. So
yeah.
Maybe one day they'll have a full office suite.
It's pretty close to that. I mean, it's got spreadsheets, it's got docs. I mean, you know, like, don't they have like a presentation tool too in there that you can do full screen,
right?
Like Flash or something.
It's a little clunky, but
yeah, it's not fast enough for me to use every day.
So is PowerPoint though.
Well, that's true. I mean, Word takes what, like 30 seconds to open now. So
Usually I just start it the day before, just in case I want to use it.
Just leave it running.
I keep it running.
You keep it cached.
Right. Oh, man. So what else is on the list?
So some negative Apple news this week. Apple's software update on Windows, there was a lot of buzz around the webs about how they are automatically including Apple's Safari browser, even if you didn't have it installed before. Which, you know, kind of, I don't know if it's really that big of a deal. I mean, I don't like it. I don't know if it was worth all the buzz they're making about it. I mean, I don't even use Safari, so I really don't care. But plus, I'm on a Mac, so I already have it.
Mm-hmm.
But they have kind of been—they've been known to do this before. I mean, they started embedding iTunes with QuickTime years ago, and you had to kind of search to find the QuickTime only installer. But it does, you know, kind of hint. It's a good reminder to people that Apple is not some great benefactor. I mean, they're a company, they're trying to make money. At the root of it, you know, they're going to do whatever it takes to do that. So just because they're the little guy and people like rooting for them doesn't mean they're always going to do things the way you like it.
Right. I have a couple of takes on this. I mean, one is, this seems like a big deal because Apple hasn't done a lot of it in the past. I mean, iTunes and QuickTime has always been bundled since forever almost.
Right.
But you haven't seen much other, you know, stuff like this from Apple. So it seems surprising. But if you, like when you buy Dell and it's got 40 programs preloaded on it with trials and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's the normal way of doing business for Windows. And I think people were just used to it on the Windows side. And then when Apple did it on the Windows side, suddenly it was like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
So I think it was kind of a double standard. Like, people are kind of singling Apple out. Like, hey, why are you doing this to me? It's like, well, why should we be the only one not getting to do it?
Right.
So, I don't know. On the other hand, when you download iTunes, it does say QuickTime plus iTunes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it tells you right there. And
yeah.
I don't know if this did that or not.
I don't know. It's not clear to me. There may have been. It may have been. The impression I got is that it's like, you know, there's updates available for your machine and it lists them out and most people don't read that. They just click next and then you suddenly get Safari. I don't know if it actually just installed it. I guess I should have read the story a little more, but it said Windows and I stopped reading.
Yeah, it looks like it was just in the Apple software update.
Yeah, so it didn't even automatically push it to your, I mean, you could just uncheck the box.
Yeah, I don't know. This is it's a whole new world out there.
That's right.
This changes everything. Not. Okay. Anyway, I'm still not a Safari user, so.
Yeah. And then there's another pretty negative Apple story. The Pwn to Own thing. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about this already, but the MacBook Air was the first machine to get hacked in the Pwn to Own thing. And there's been a lot of back and forth about this on whether it was really a big deal. You know, it's hard to say because they aren't allowed to release the actual hack they used until the company has a time to look at it, which is a good way to keep this event continuing in the future. And the, you know, the hacker actually got a free MacBook Air and some cash, so pretty cool there. But Vista did eventually succumb. There was a little note I saw that the group posted saying that they would have actually had it much, much sooner, except for they were not expecting Service Pack 1 on the Vista box.
Right.
So the only thing that survived was the Ubuntu Linux install. Never was hacked, though there were rumors that the team that was working on that had found a way in but didn't have the time to create the bug. So it's like they didn't really come prepared, almost, it seemed like. Whereas the Apple guy, I mean, as soon as he was able to direct the person to go to a website, he was in.
Yeah, so that was it. It said 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But that So 2 minutes for the Mac.
Right.
But it sounds like he had some pre thing that was ready to go. And probably they all had some level of preparedness. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
And then 2 days for the Vista Box.
Right. I mean, it goes to show Apple's, they're not invulnerable. I mean, it's still going to have holes. And, you know, right now there's no need to run antivirus, but it could be in the future at some time you'll need it. But
well, viruses were never, my take has always been that no one would bother to write viruses for Mac because there wasn't enough of a market share for Macs to be an effective vector to spread your virus.
Right.
But as more and more people go to Macs, I think they're going to start being targeted more.
Yeah, it's pretty like, maybe this is wrong, but I feel like inherently it is more secure. Mm-hmm. Maybe not than Vista now. Vista, I feel like, is actually pretty solid. You know, there's still a lot of legacy code. That's one thing Apple has going for them. And browsers tend to be the way that people use to get into systems now.
Right.
Because it's, you know, kind of, it's inherently open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the window to the world. So if there's a crack in it, you'll find it.
Right. And I mean, you know, Vista's pretty secure because even if you're the administrator, you can barely do anything.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the advice you should learn from this is watch where you browse. Be a smart user and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Which all of our listeners, I hope, are.
Right. And it's kind of weird, too. It's almost like we've come full circle for the Linux stuff, because in the old days, you know, if you were running a Unix or a Linux system,
mm-hmm.
and when I say old days, I'm saying, you know, between 5 and 10 years ago, that was the thing that was so vulnerable because it was a true multi-user operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was probably running Telnet and FTP and R-shell and R-login and all these different ways that you could get into the box. And it was listening on these ports waiting for you to talk to it. Whereas the Windows, like Windows 95, you know, or 98 is just sitting there and it can't really do anything unless you're sitting in front of it.
You were lucky if you got on the network with it.
Right. And I don't know, it just seems like, you know, now, I mean, Linux, of course, is still a very powerful multi-user OS, even if people don't use it that way.
Mm.
But, you know, about the time that Windows 2000 came around, Windows 2000 started to have a lot more multi-user power,
right,
as far as being able to run lots of services and do a lot of things at once. So it's just I'm a little surprised that it wasn't flopped. Like, I'm surprised Linux wasn't broken first and the Mac wasn't broken last. I would have figured Vista maybe in the middle.
Yeah
I don't know. Interesting stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
Let's see what else we got. It looks like we covered that. So the Creative sound cards, there's a big uprising going on in the net right now with Creative sound card users, and a lot of them very unhappy because there's a guy whose forum name was Daniel K, and he was basically trying to help people that had Vista and Creative sound cards,
right?
Because classically the Creative sound cards that people had under XP, they had a lot of functionality and would do a lot of different things. But once you upgraded to Vista, all that got kind of turned off and it would just kind of barely work.
Right.
Well, this guy kind of dedicated his own time to like rewriting the drivers and getting the things working again for Vista. And then everybody was really appreciating that. And then he started soliciting donations. And some of his driver stuff would let some of the Creative software run on other sound cards or cards that they didn't intend. So Creative wound up saying, please stop. And this started a giant ruckus over on the Creative forums. So the Daniel K guy said that he would, you know, stop soliciting donations and stop doing this stuff. But Creative's like, no, we saw you were on another website soliciting donations, and you know, you're passing around our intellectual property and you're profiting from it, and we don't want you to do this. And everybody's really mad because Creative has just completely failed to support Vista in so many ways and a lot of
Yeah, they really have. I mean,
and the elephant in the room that no one's talking about is the fact that the sound card market is pretty much dead. I mean, no one really buys sound cards
anymore. I haven't bought a sound card in, I don't know, 3 years.
Because the motherboards all do it now. The motherboards are doing your networking.
Well, and it seems like, I don't know what the statistic is, but it seems like most people are buying laptops.
Yeah, a lot
the,
more.
The numbers I've seen, I mean, that's the growth market right now is laptops.
Mm-hmm.
Desktops have kind of stagnated, and I mean, everybody I'm talking to, when they're looking to buy a new computer, they're buying a laptop, whether it's Mac, Windows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my parents are now getting ready to buy a new laptop. You know, a bunch of people at work have bought new laptops. It's like, well, what do you need a sound card for? That's definitely going to be integrated in the laptop. So, there's big news this week from the Photoshop market. Adobe finally announced Photoshop Express, their online version of Photoshop. So this is, again, the web app type thing. Since it's Adobe, of course, it's using Flash. And, you know, up front, it seems pretty good. You know, it's... I did a couple tests, and I uploaded a photo and did some editing to it. And, you know, it's mostly things that almost every photo management app does for you now. Things like, you know, red eye and exposure and crop rotate, focus, soft focus, and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Color changes.
Right.
So I'm not really sure why anyone would want to use it. Because it's not very fast.
Right. I tried it out. It was a little slow.
So it's like, if you're on Windows, on Vista, there's a nice photo gallery tool. Or you've got Picasa from Google, which is free, which is awesome and does all of this.
Yeah.
And will manage your photos for you locally.
Right.
And you've got on Mac, you've got iPhoto, which does all this, you know, not as well as Picasa, but it does it well, and you can do all these changes quickly.
Right.
Like, I don't see why anyone would really want to do this. And then there's, you know, sites like Flickr that already do some of this built in and lets you share the photos. I'm missing what they're... I feel like they're looking for a niche that's not there.
Well, I don't know if it's that. My business sense on this on web businesses is very bad, but it almost feels to me like companies, they have to have their flavor of the thing out there.
Right.
Like someone like Adobe, they can't afford not to have a cloud-based photo editor because other people are doing it.
Shows that they're keeping up.
Right. So it is. It's basically playing keep up instead of playing, you know, get ahead.
I mean, I'll give them credit. It looks great. It doesn't feel like a web app when you're using it, mm-hmm. except for that when you're doing some of the complicated things like some of the manipulation of the photo, like doing the stupid water twirl thing, or
right.
you know, some of those more advanced ones. They try to make it so that you can move it around and see it updating real time, but it's not fast enough to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
So that really feels clunky. Now, it does do some nice things, like you have versioning built in, so you can see each change you make and go back and forth. And it does have a gallery part, so you could use this as your Flickr or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know. This, to me, it seems too soon to do an app like this on the web.
Yeah. I like the fact, I want all these companies to do this so that there'll be competition and that right. they'll all get better.
Right.
I like having choices, like, mm-hmm. oh, you use that one. Well, I use this one because I prefer the blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I like that. But I agree that maybe photo editing, you know, out in the cloud, as they say, is maybe we're not quite ready for that. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're doing Photoshop on an old PC.
Right.
Because it's not that responsive.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, you know, it's trying to do this stuff, you know, back and you're back and forth. Are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Are you here?
Mm-hmm.
One thing I did like that they did with this is they let you kind of test drive it.
Yeah.
So a guy, and you know, it just popped into my head, so I apologize to the listeners because I don't have the reference, and I'm sorry to the guy that wrote the article. I don't know if it was on Lifehacker or what, but basically it was someone talking about registration forms must die.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
But they were talking about it's smart to let people come in and test drive, play with your tool. Then if they want to save the file they made, then you get asked to log in.
Mm-hmm.
But when the first thing you do to someone is like, hey, we have something new and cool. Click here to create an account.
Right.
Well, goodbye, because you just killed the whole buzz. I don't want to try it out now because that's a pain.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've got that link, so we'll put that in the show notes.
Oh, you do have that? Yeah. Okay, good. I'm glad you ran into that, too. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm glad that they're doing it, but it feels, like you say, it feels like they're just trying to play keep up, and it's not really revolutionary, and it doesn't work that well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like you've got to be smart about these web apps. I'm all for the web app. I love the web app. I use it. I mean, I use Gmail every day. I use Google Reader. I would never use a desktop RSS reader. But I'm barely using Google Docs, and that's like borderline for me. And it's just word processing. Mm-hmm. It's pretty simple. Something like, and maybe it's just because I care too much about it. You know, maybe if somebody didn't know about Picasa, they'd use Adobe Photoshop Express and be like, "Wow, this is amazing." But
and see, I'm not a Picasa user, but I mean, I usually have at least Photoshop Elements wherever I go.
Right.
So I'm not really hurting for a photo app.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, both of us, you know, we're used to using something like Photoshop or Photoshop Elements already.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I think it sucks to have to come in to the race second or third.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, at the same time, I don't think Yahoo should quit search just because Google's number one. I think that would be a huge mistake. You know, not to stay.
No, I totally agree. I'm not looking at this as in no one should do, or that Adobe made a mistake. It's just I don't use any of the stuff on Flickr either.
Right.
Like, I don't use any of these. I don't think anybody should be making one. But maybe that's not the right answer, because eventually it will be fast enough. It just feels too soon for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe in 10 years we'll be doing video editing in the cloud.
Well, they do have that already for YouTube.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had the little thing.
That actually worked pretty well.
Yeah.
So why is that so much better?
I'd forgotten that was out there.
Yeah. I messed with it a little bit, and it worked. It was fast. I mean, you saw your results almost instantly. So I don't know what the difference is.
Man.
Seems like that should be a lot harder.
But wasn't the interface kind of bad?
Well, it wasn't great, but...
It wasn't terrible?
Yeah. Mm. It worked.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Adobe... So here's the thing. Everything Adobe makes is big and clunky, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, CS and
yeah,
Premiere...
Yeah, I mean, Photoshop's huge.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do anything in it, but... You can do everything. Yeah. But I mean, kind of along these web apps, you know, I'll have to dig this link up, but we will have a link in the show notes. I'll find it for you, Ryan. But I was reading some articles about Mozilla, what their goals are for the next version of Firefox. It's like predictions for Firefox 4 from the developer or something like that.
Right.
And they were talking about, you know, there's some new things coming out. HTML5 apparently has a client-side database protocol, and they're talking about using stuff like that to run more and more things on the client side, you know, versus server-side processing, which is what most things are right now, and really turning the browser into less of a browser and more of a, you know, hardcore application. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. I guess partly because I've always kind of been of the mindset that a web app should be simple, clean, and quick, and like the quick part of something, and then give me a desktop app that can access that data, pull it down to the client, and use my client power to process.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, the cloud is about data, not about processing.
Right.
Whereas this Photoshop app and a lot of other things are starting to try to put the processing in the cloud.
Right. Let us crunch for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is dumb, because that's going, you know, like we've talked many, many times, that's going back to
the old
thin client mainframe.
Right.
Which there's no reason my 2.3 gigahertz, 3 gig MacBook Pro should not be doing the processing for you.
Right.
Especially if my pipe is getting fast enough that pushing that data from the cloud to me is so easy.
Right. Well, to me, this feels like companies in the beginning there was Windows, you
right.
know, because I mean for so many years Windows has been the player. You know,
mm-hmm.
if you wanted to make money, you wrote Windows software, and that was just it.
Yeah.
You know, in the past 5 years, we've seen basically Apple making a huge comeback. So
mm-hmm.
now
mm-hmm.
developers are like, well, there's still a lot of money in Windows, but people are kind of scared of Vista, and everyone's buying Macs now, so maybe we should go to web-based, because then
right.
if I write my stuff to run in Firefox, it doesn't matter what they buy. And, you know, Linux is always the third player out there that's, well, we can bring Linux users into the fold too.
Mm-hmm.
And so the answer is, well, we need to bring everything in the browser, because then we're OS independent.
Yeah.
So I think it's maybe just, you know, it's the bulletproof vest for investors or for software developers to try to bring stuff into the cloud.
It just feels like they're doing, you know, they're making the same mistakes Java made, where Java was supposedly the end-all be-all of the programming languages because it's cross-platform. It'll run exactly the same on every machine. But that's the problem.
Right.
It doesn't integrate into the OS.
Yeah.
And that's the mistake. You know, I don't want to use an app on my Mac that is clunky like it would be on Windows. I mean, right. I want it to be tightly integrated when it's a desktop app.
I'll say this. I'm already so dissatisfied with Firefox 2. I mean, yeah. I'm literally really unhappy with it yeah. right now, the way it's running.
Right.
And if the browser becomes the OS, you know, it kind of in that, not in a literal sense, but in the sense that everything's happening inside the browser, or the browser is this layer
mm-hmm.
that you're counting on to do everything, I think I'm going to be really unhappy.
Yeah.
And now maybe Firefox 3 will change my outlook on that.
I mean, Firefox 3 for me has been a lot better. They've done things like I just said, where they are integrating each version more into each OS, style and functionality wise.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like the idea of, like you're saying, the browser becoming the OS.
But I mean, the further the more hooks the browser has into the OS, then the more security problems we have, right?
Right. Yes.
So
I mean, I want limited hooks, I guess I'm saying.
Mm.
You know, I want it to use the same download manager, or like, you know, there's the OS X password manager,
right,
which is very secure, and I don't mind them using that instead of Firefox's own separate questionable password manager.
Yeah, I would tend not to trust the browser to manage my password security stuff.
Yeah,
if I can help.
So, I don't know. It's it'll be interesting to see where things move. I mean, they are doing some good things. You know, Mozilla is doing the whole Prism thing, which is like it's a platform for web apps where it lets you run a web app in its own window.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of separate, sort of like, I don't know if you remember that, what was it, Mailplane? It was like a Google or a Gmail app.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of like a blurred between a web app and a desktop app.
Yeah, it was kind of like a pop-out sort of
thing,
and it would run over.
Yeah, it ran its own thing, and it had its own buttons and everything, and felt like an app, but it wasn't.
Mm.
And that's what Mozilla's trying to do with Prism. We'll have a link to that in the show notes, too. But, we'll see. We'll see. It could be, if there's a gigantic security hole, it will cause Mozilla to suddenly become the hated thing.
I think, don't we have like an online version of Office? Like Microsoft's heading towards this whole thing?
Yeah, they have. It's like Office Live, I think.
Right.
I've never used it. But.
You know, even they see that, you know, in order to fight piracy and to do different things, that they're going to have to bring things into the cloud so that,
right.
you know, copying a CD-ROM is no longer a way to get Windows apps mm-hmm. or Microsoft apps, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, unfortunately, it's coming to everything. And just hopefully when it happens in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. All right, that's going to wrap up another episode of Angry Admins. I want to thank everyone for tuning back in and pointing your podcast catchers to the Angry Admins RSS feed.
Yes.
As always, feedback@angryadmins.com. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, flames, you are just sitting there with nothing to do, send us an email, feedback@angryadmins.com. And check the website, angryadmins.com, for our show notes. If you want to look at any of the stories we talked about in a little more detail, we will have all of those links up there for you to peruse.
Yeah, we're not just making this up.
That's right. That's right. So until next week, I'm Joe Bibby.
And I'm Ryan Necessary.
Stay angry.